well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. I tell you, early August, 70 degrees for the high in Central Virginia today. I will take this. Oh, love it. Love being able to wear a hoodie in August. This is fantastic. And I'm also very pleased we've got Paul Vallone from Grassroots North Carolina join us on the program here in a moment or two. You know, there are a couple of bills that were passed out of the North Carolina legislature this year. Good news for gun owners and, frankly, for students and staff of private schools as well. The problem is that Governor Josh Stein vetoed these bills. More good news is that one of those bills has been overridden, and the second override has already happened in the Senate. We're now waiting on the State House. We're talking about permitless carry for that second measure. The first measure that has been overridden, the governor's veto overridden, it will go into effect. It will become law in North Carolina. Will allow for private schools to have armed school staff, which is fantastic news. Governor Josh Stein poo-pooing the idea of allowing these private schools to have trained, vetted, volunteer staff members carrying a concealed firearm as a first line of defense in case somebody, you know, walks onto campus with murder on their mind. We'll talk about the objection from Governor Stein here with Paul Vallone, but you can probably tell by my eye rolling that I was not impressed with the governor's rationale for denying this safety measure to private schools. Anyway, let's talk about that bill. Let's talk about constitutional carry, or rather permitless carry, with Paul Vallone from Grassroots North Carolina. Take a look and a listen. Paul, thanks very much for coming on the program. It's good to see you, my friend.
Well, thank you, Cam.
And congratulations. We have seen one veto override in the books and another is in progress, right?
That is a correct statement. Last week, we overrode Governor Stein's veto on House Bill 193, which would allow concealed handgun permit holders to carry in private schools with the permission of the administration. It also adds some minor provisions to improve our range protection law. That one was a squeaker. We passed the override in the North Carolina House with exactly the needed 72 votes because one Democrat, Shelley Willingham, crossed over and voted with us. the Senate, of course, has the requisite 30 votes, 30 out of 50 Republicans, mm-hmm. to override Stein's vetoes. The House is one seat shy. So right. We either have to get one Republican or one Democrat to vote for us, or two Democrats to walk and not vote.
Yeah. And then again, that is assuming that every Republican is going to vote in favor of an override, right? And that was the case for this bill that will allow private schools to have armed school staff, which, you know, in some ways, I don't even think this is really a Second Amendment issue. I know we're talking about folks with concealed carry permits, but to me, this is a school safety issue. And I thought it was outrageous that Governor Stein essentially said private schools are on their own. You know, if they can't afford to hire private security, tough cookies, right? Yeah,
exactly right. And actually, we've been pushing similar bills for a number of years now. And so we're happy to see that we at least made that incremental gain once again. So yeah. little gains at a time. We've lost our rights incrementally. We're going to regain them incrementally.
Absolutely. Which brings us to permitless carry in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. So the good news is that the Senate has voted to override Governor Stein's veto of permitless carry, correct?
That is a correct statement also. Okay. And they send it over to the House. Basically, the chamber that first passed the bill has to do the override first under the rules. And so now it goes to the House. And although it was calendared last week, they didn't do overrides on, I believe it was, four bills that, quite frankly, they don't have the votes for yet. We have four recalcitrant, let's put it that way, Republicans. All right. The good news is we have been blasting Ted Davis and Bill Brisson because they voted no on second reading for Senate Bill 50. The good news is Brisson now tells me that he will vote to override. The bad news is that we've got four Republicans who are so far no's, or actually three no's and a squishy yes.
Okay. The with Brisson being the squishy yes?
No, actually, Brisson is a yes.
Oh, okay. Okay. Oh, so we've got four others then we're dealing with.
Yeah, Ted Davis, still Ted. And then Jimmy Dixon, forget his first name, Penny, and Ross. Okay. So we are in the process of putting pressure on those four Republicans right now. We're going to be doing robocalls and robotexts in their districts. We just did a fundraiser to do some radio spots in the districts, and I think we have enough to do some radio spots. I'm particularly interested in Penny, who is in, I believe, Johnston and Harnett counties, which is somewhat rural, and I'm surprised that he would take that position. That's Dixon that's in that area. And then we have Ross, I believe, is in Alamance County. Now, Alamance County is solidly pro-gun and fairly Republican. So we're going to be beating on those guys make some, vote for the override.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to see that at least one of the folks who voted no has changed their mind and says they'll now vote to approve permitless carry. You mentioned Ted Davis, who was a no vote on second reading, and then you mentioned these other Republicans. So if I recall correctly, Paul, when this bill came up in the House the first time around, there were, what, about 10 Republicans who didn't vote, right? They were absent for the vote. Is that where those four Republicans, they didn't cast a vote the first time around? We haven't seen anybody flip from a yes to a no, in other words, right?
I believe that is correct. Yes, okay. You are correct. Those are non-voters. And we were beating on the non-voters for a while, several of whom got indignant because they said, oh, I was attending my granddaughter's whatever, So, and those were, people who we can count on voting for it. Diane Wheatley, for example. But these three, maybe four, we're going to have to apply some pressure on. And suffice to say that our information is from privileged sources that they have expressed concerns about these bills for one reason or not, this bill for one reason or another.
Okay. All right. So assuming that these Republicans fall in line, as you say, you're either going to need to have a Democrat crossover, which didn't happen the first time around. You're going to have two Democrats absent themselves from the chamber, maybe in a bathroom break. I'm curious, you mentioned the Democrat who crossed over and voted for this school safety bill, Representative Willingham. Mm-hmm. Has there been any discussion with that representative about coming on board with permitless carry?
Yes. And I'm not really at liberty to talk about that just yet.
Okay.
But the Democrats, by virtue of the fact that they spew hate at anybody that doesn't toe the party line, they are alienating a number of Democrats right now, including Carla Cunningham and Willingham and Cecil Brockman and Najib. I forget what Najib's last name is, but they all voted one way or another. They voted with Republicans to override eight of Stein's vetoes last week. And so it could be immigration issues. It could be gender, recognition in schools, whatever it happens to be. But right now, they're screaming that they're going to primary these people, that they're going to, last session, they drove Tricia Cotham from the Democrat Party to the Republican Party. And so we're making similar entreaties, and we'll hope that they spew some more hate at them and, want to drive primaries their way. We'll find out. We'll find out first. The veto can be overridden for the rest of the legislative session, which includes next year. However, they're going back in to vote again on August 26th. And so that is what we are targeting right now for these four legislators, Davis, Dixon, Penny, and Ross.
Okay. That's good to know, though, by the way, that that veto session doesn't have to happen, you know, right away, that you do have some time to keep lobbying these lawmakers. Hopefully, again, sooner the better, we can get this done. I would love to see North Carolina become the 30th permitless carry state in the nation. I'd love to get that done, you know, again, before the pages turn to September. But it is good to know that if it doesn't happen, that those efforts will continue. And, you know, you talk about the primary challenges for those Democrats who, you know, dared to go along and override to Governor Stein's vetoes. I know that Grassroots North Carolina has also talked about, hey, you Republicans that aren't on board with permitless carry, that aren't listening to the will of your constituents, maybe you guys should be primary too. Is that a discussion for later in the election cycle, Paul, or have you started having those discussions about which Republicans may need to be primary next year?
Oh, we have some ideas, yes.
Okay.
Those ideas will get more formulated as we go on and get closer to next year. We'll be looking. We have primaried a lot of Republicans in the state of North Carolina, oftentimes successfully, removing people from office. It's frankly one of the things that it scares them most. And so,
yeah.
That's definitely on the radar.
Okay. Well, it is encouraging to hear that the efforts to get permitless carry passed and over the governor's veto are continuing. You know, you and I have talked about this the entire session, right? We've acknowledged the challenges that exist and why they exist, the math, you know, in the House. But I got to say, Paul, I mean, you're a bulldog, and North Carolina gun owners, members of Grassroots North Carolina, they're bulldogs too. They are not giving up. You're not giving up, digging in your heels and continuing to work on these lawmakers. What can supporters of permitless carry do right now to help put those pressure, help keep the pressure on these lawmakers?
They need to go to our website at grnc.org. And I believe on the right side of the page, you'll see a link for alerts, our legislative alerts. Click on that. And the most recent alert should have the names of the four legislators and their phone numbers. And we want people to email and call these people. And frankly, I don't care where they're from. The reality is that they keep telling us they want to hear only from their constituents. Well, their vote affects the entire state. So quite frankly, we want the entire state to give them input.
Yeah.
And that's how we work. Intense grassroots pressure on particular legislators, particular committees. So grnc.org, and then go to alerts.
All right. Well, you've got one to flip already, and we've got a few more to go. Paul Vallone with Grassroots North Carolina. Always appreciate your time. And obviously, I always appreciate the activism and the work that you're doing there in North Carolina. Look forward to talking again very soon.
And we appreciate you helping us get the word out, sir. Thank you.
Anytime. It's always good checking in with Paul. And I'm glad that, glad we've got some positive news to report. And I will say, by the way, the Grassroots North Carolina alerts are great. They're a great resource, even if you're, particularly if you live in North Carolina, but I've subscribed, I get the alerts on a regular basis, and they are incredibly helpful just to know what's going on. And again, to provide a call to action. Here's what you can do as a gun owner to help advance the cause. All right, let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Northern Virginia. Fairfax suspect charged in toddler abduction had lengthy criminal history. Maybe the better headline is has lengthy criminal history, because he is still with us. 26-year-old Andre Caceres Jaldin allegedly picked up a 3-year-old girl who had wandered away from a play area inside the Fair Oaks Mall back on July 18th. The child's mom spotted Jaldin with her daughter in a nearby store. According to authorities, confronted him, managed to get the girl back. Jaldin allegedly fled, but was arrested hours later at a hotel in Chantilly, Virginia, with a stolen vehicle, by the way, found at the scene. So Jaldin now been charged with abduction of a minor, as well as a grand larceny auto. He's currently being held without bond in the Fairfax County Jail. And as the Center Square reports, court records show that he's been involved in more than 30 criminal cases in Fairfax County, including 8 previous charges for assault and destruction of property. Lieutenant Governor Winsome Earl Sears, who, of course, is the Republican nominee for governor in Virginia, posted on social media that Jaldine had 43 prior charges, including an attempted murder, and was released without bail before the abduction attempt. As the Center Square says, her post called attention to what she described as a breakdown in the system. Meanwhile, Republican congressional candidate Stuart Whitson, who is running in the 11th district against James Walkinshaw, this is the open seat vacated by the death of Jerry Connolly in Northern Virginia. Whitson referenced a case in a social media post last week criticizing local policy, saying a toddler kidnapped in broad daylight from our neighborhood mall. This is what happens when soft on crime politicians put criminals ahead of your family. You know, I have not dug into these specific policies here, but we know that these types of cases happen in red states, blue states, purple states. This is not something that is unfortunately limited to, you know, San Francisco, Los Angeles, New York City, Chicago. We've seen some individuals with criminal histories as long as my arm in places like Texas, Oklahoma, Alabama, who are still, you know, cut loose and able to reoffend. So, in this case, Jaldine innocent until proven guilty, right? These are allegations against him. But again, with at a minimum of 30 previous incidents in Fairfax County, including some pretty serious charges, things like assault, attempted murder. Yeah, you do have to wonder, why was this suspect out? Why was he not behind bars to begin with? And why apparently was he released on bail after being charged with some of these pretty serious offenses? That didn't, again, not the case now, but it shouldn't be that the 31st time is the charm here. By the way, I know Fair Oaks Mall, at least I did. That was our local mall when I lived in Northern Virginia years ago. I've actually taken my now adult kids to that play area. I know the play area they're talking about. And it is open. It is chaotic. I didn't like taking my kids there because there were just too many damn kids, quite honestly. And I worried about the germs on the, playground equipment. It's an area in which it'd be very easy for a parent who's not paying close attention to their child to lose their child if somebody walks over, snatches them up, runs away. I don't know how crowded Fair Oaks Mall is these days, but when I lived up there, it was really crowded on the weekends. So this mom was very lucky that she was able to find her daughter before the child's abductor left the mall. And again, just a reminder that, you know, even in these open public areas where you think nothing's going to come to any harm, and we've got hundreds of people who are walking around, keeping an eye on things, that doesn't mean they're keeping an eye on your kid, right? So when you're in a space like that, make sure that you're keeping an eye on your loved ones. All right, on to today's armed citizen story from the state of Illinois. Shooting over the weekend, stopped by a concealed carry holder, boy age 4 among 7 shot at a Harvey house party. The suspect killed by a person with a valid concealed carry license, according to local police. The Chicago Tribune reports that a house party underway in Harvey, when just after 8 p.m., 2 people arrived at the party and opened fire. One of the party goers was armed and licensed to carry a concealed firearm and returned fire at the suspect, striking and killing one and injuring the other. The injured suspect taken to a local hospital in stable condition and is now in police custody. Preliminary reports show that 5 other people, besides the suspects, were shot, the youngest of whom was a 4-year-old boy. Thankfully, that boy is also listed as stable at a local hospital, as are the other 4 victims. So the only person killed in this incident was the person who opened fire on this party, who was shot and killed in what is clearly a justifiable use of force by somebody who was licensed to carry a firearm. You know, this story did not get nearly the attention that the armed citizen in Michigan, Traverse City, Michigan, right, who held the mass stabber at a Walmart until police arrived. I'm not sure why that is the case. I can't figure out why one of these armed citizen stories, you know, gets national news attention when so many others maybe get a mention in the local paper, 30 seconds on a local TV newscast, and that's it. But again, here you have a situation that could have been much, much worse. Two armed individuals shooting at a house full of partygoers were able to, again, injure five people before they were shot by this armed citizen. Had that armed citizen not been there, who knows how many rounds would have been fired? Who knows how many people would have been shot? Who knows how many people would have died? But because there was somebody there with the ability to fire back, lives were undoubtedly saved. Finally today, our good deed of the day: in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Speaking of saving lives, a good Samaritan in Owosso, Oklahoma, who helped save the life of an individual who suffered a cardiac event while out on a walk. I'm sorry, I said this was Owosso, Oklahoma. This is actually Owosso, Michigan. It was back in June. Frank Livingston, on a walk with his neighbor and friend, Linda Robertson, and his heart stopped. Robertson said they've known each other about 20 years. They didn't normally walk together until that day. Robertson said, "I think we're both kind of grateful that we made that decision. Otherwise, that morning might have ended much differently." So they're out walking down the street. Livingston all of a sudden just collapses, goes into cardiac arrest. Robertson said there was no warning of any kind or distress or anything like that. I heard Frank kind of make a sound like, "Ugh," and I turned to my right and he was face down on the ground. She said a passerby who didn't even live in Owosso stopped and was able to help me. That passerby, a woman named Sylvia Hines, she was driving by. She saw Robertson frantically waving for help. She said, I swung around. I illegally parked. I ran across the lawn. And Frank, Mr. Livingston, was on the ground. Hines and Robertson flipped him over onto his back. Somebody called 911. And Hines started performing CPR while communicating with 911 dispatchers. And she said, he finally gives me about two big breaths. So, yeah, that was what it took to get his heart going again. First responders on the way. Livingston himself says, you know, only 10% of people with cardiac arrest survive, and even less survive without any impairment. So I'm really lucky, he said. And he is. Mauricio Barrera II, who's a paramedic intern who responded to the scene that day, said, lucky for our patient, stars kind of aligned. He was walking with a family friend. Bystander witnessed the arrest. Was immediately able to perform compressions in under a minute. Cops arrived in just under 2 minutes. We were there in under three. And, you know, again, that was a series of fortunate events, to be sure. But frankly, it might not have mattered if police arrived in under 2 minutes or if paramedics got there in less than 3 minutes. If Sylvia Hines had not gotten there within seconds and started performing CPR. So in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing for a stranger in need, Sylvia Hines of Owosso, Michigan, we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company, and I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. I'm looking forward to seeing you again tomorrow. We will conclude our broadcast week with more of the big stories of the day, perhaps even some of the big stories of the week here on Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. But you don't have to wait until then to find out what's going on with your right to keep and bear arms. Just check out BearingArms.com throughout the day, keeping you up to date on all of the big stories from D.C., state capitals, courthouses around the country, even some armed citizen stories for you as well. And if you like what you see, I'd encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Just use the promo code FIGHT and you can get 60% off your membership. And we certainly do appreciate your support. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.